Hello, everybody, and I'm Klaus.
I'm Eric. I'm glad to be back on the podcast series.
Yeah. So in this time, we're going to talk about the fundamentals or the basics of the people platform, and try to give a rundown about the lower layers of the architecture, and explain how that works, kind of like with using a whiteboard and some drawings instead of presentation material.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, even though that we try to make these voice capable, I think this would probably require video.
Yeah, we moved to another room with a whiteboard this time.
Last episode
was a great episode.
Yeah.
About the microservice architecture underneath Wanda, the Embracer pattern, and the architectural blueprint, how it's defined and how it's actually applied. That was really interesting.
Yeah.
So we tried to continue a little bit under the hood here, I guess.
Yeah.
Looking at data flows.
Yes.
Data definition.
Yeah.
And message-based architecture and how we apply that in an integration scenario.
Yeah, so we're actually going to show an actual integration between two of our products, being student management and business world. So we're going to kind of show that how that integration works using these technologies, and there's more integrations between products coming up. But let's get going on. So let's start with the kind of the fundamental piece of the equation for our integration strategy is what we refer to as our ontology, right?
Yes.
So the ontology or business object taxonomy, and then the canonical data model, which is essentially a unified or ecosystem-wide data model that everybody understands.
Yeah. So it's our data universe, so to speak.
Yeah. So we kind of have, you know, we make a little drawing of a document here. So it's just, you know, it actually contains all the attributes for any given object, being both the master data object, like customer, supplier, or transactional documents like invoice, expense reports, purchase order. We all have a common definition of all the attributes.
Yes. This has proven, I mean, so we call these data items enterprise documents. When talking to people, the word document is a little bit of an ambiguous definition, depending on who you talk to. But these are then not your PDF attachments to an invoice or anything like that. These are documents describing data in a technical format.
Yeah.
And we have a definition of different types of objects and what you would expect to be in them, which then amounts to our ontology. Think of it as your schema, right?
Yeah, so you could say that it's actually an interesting discussion. Why do we call it an enterprise document, right? Enterprise is the company. But if you go back before the kind of the implementation of electronic data processing and that sort, you actually, when you had an invoice, you actually had a printed document.
Yeah.
Right. So that's actually where it comes from, and that's what we call it. But you're absolutely right. It's nothing to do with PDFs. It's print out and read. It's not a physical piece of document. It's a logical thing.
Yes.
Correct. So we have these enterprise documents. And they're all defined, and we actually have a repository of these that you can go, you can find it if you go to the hub, and you can actually find links to it. And they contain all the attributes, but they don't, so there's some applications, there's some differences between applications, what they have on attributes.
Yep.
Like some have, but there's then we then define a subset of all attributes for any given data object.
Yep.
Let's call it a business object or data object.
Yep.
That always needs to be in there, regardless, right?
Yep. So the job for a product amounts to describe their data universe, at least starting with the pieces of data they want to exchange with the rest of the ecosystem.
Right.
So they would go look at what their data is and compare it to existing documents and classifications thereof to sort of find the right one. So you could have something in a system called a debtor, someone that owes you money, But in the ontology, that would then be your customer, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
So it's an alignment of what you classify stuff is. That's sort of the first step.
Yeah.
So you have customers because you have people that own you money in your system, right?
Right.
And then it is, so how is your customer described? And then the enterprise documents harmonizes that. So it brings about some naming rules on your properties.
Yeah.
So when your customer has a name, that property name is name. You don't call it something else,
no.
like customer name. You call it name, because that's what the ontology says. So there's a modeling exercise involved, for which there is tooling.
Like a domain modeler.
How you can sort of model your enterprise documents and find the existing ones that you are based on.
Yeah.
And then you have variations, right?
Yeah.
So you have the customer, the common attributes of a customers that everybody sort of has to use and cannot change. And then do you have your specialization of customer, right?
Right.
So you have the abstract idea of a customer, and then you have your Unit 4 financials versions of a customer with the Unit 4 financials specific extra information, right?
Right.
And it's all described in the ontology.
Yeah.
So the ontology will say you what the common fields are, which ones are used by financials, and this is the full document of a financials customer.
Yeah, and actually we just, until recently, we really didn't bother too much about, or we didn't bother at all about the specific data types for these attributes, but we're going to include that as well. So
yep.
These are these attributes, we will predetermine the data type. So for example, if you have a last updated attribute, it's going to be a date time data
yes.
type and not just a string.
A UTC date type.
Yes, and we're going to supply with standard code lists for like currency and languages and status code, so we don't get into an argument about how do you then convert this inbound attribute. You always know it's a date type,
yeah.
right? It have to be said that this is all JSON, by the way, right? It's all JSON. Just so.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the enterprise document definition is a description of what your JSON would look like when you have an instance of that document.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
So it's also a standardization on data language, and then the data language is JSON.
Yeah. And as always, all this information and details can be found on the hub.unit4.com.
Yes.
So that's
a good point.
That's a good.
It was announced that the docsu4pp.com
is
going away, and we're moving all content.
So you can find it here on the PP platform. You can find all this information, and it's a good place to go look and get some more
good,
details.
Good reminder.
Anyway, so now we kind of covered the basics. So. For an application to become a first, what we refer to as a first class citizen of the ecosystem, being the ecosystem driven integration driven by using a combination of enterprise document and MesaSub, they need to start being capable of producing
yeah.
these documents and consuming these documents.
Yes.
And you know, one thing is to do that, but we actually have some patterns for that. So let's try to go into a concrete example where we kind of draw up the different
mm-hmm.
artifacts and what they do and what's happening there. Should we try that?
Yep.
Let's take this one away and so let's take the you know, like the example where we're actually using student management,
mm-hmm.
U for SM and Business World.
Yep.
And
So let's first state what we're not doing, right? We're not going to Business World and giving it an address to a student management instance and having that one to call an API and pull all its documents in.
Right.
That would be a point-to-point integration. That's not what we're doing here.
It's loosely coupled and event-driven.
Yes.
And then we do have request response pattern as well.
Yes.
Response. And we get into why exactly we have that, right? But that is kind of like an interesting thing. But it's a loosely coupled event-driven architecture.
Yeah.
And it's a multi-point integration, right? Which means that if I, as an application, sends out information, then it could go, I don't know who the consumers are. There could be a number of consumers. And the only thing I need to know as an application is, where is the bus? And then the rest is handled.
Yep.
And is the, in transparency, it gets routed depending on the consumers.
Yep.
So we don't have this API to API problem to problem.
Yes.
Yeah, good point.
So let's do the example of, this not, might not be totally correct as how the integration actually is, but we have done an integration, or one of our teams have done an integration between student management and Unifor Business World, where certain pieces of enterprise documents are exchanged. So if we draw then student management as one system on one side.
Yeah.
I'm going to introduce a new term here. That's a source system. It's something you will find when interacting with many pieces of the People platform, that we call a system a source system. So in the message hub, this will be a source system. Unit for student management as a source system.
Yeah.
It means it's a source. It's coming from, it's a source for certain enterprise documents.
But it, but it's not the same as a system of record.
It's not the same as a system.
Just but it's just a source.
It's just what we call an application.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we have Unifor Business World. Another source system. And over here, in this integration, we have this source system specialty is students, as one of the things that it's sort of records and has expertise
about. Student management.
Student management. Students is a very important enterprise document, I guess.
Yes.
And in business world, people that work for you is an important thing because they will get paid and so on. So in this integration example, some of our students are also working extra as tutors, right? So then in from the perspective of business world, they are employees and that get paid, right? So when a student is created here or changed, that's sort of an event, right? It, something happened to one of your enterprise documents.
Yeah.
So the student John maybe became a tutor. He was hired as a tutor as well. That could be. Or he was just enrolled into the system. Meaning, this source system has something interesting to say about one of his enterprise documents, and we could create that. So in here we have the message hub, and you always draw a hub like a pipe. this is the message hub, and now we're going to do this event-driven pattern of data exchange.
Yeah.
So all student management really does is that whatever happened on the inside needs to be communicated. So they will either have or have to produce this enterprise document for exchange. So we draw that document here. And that's John the student being created. And then they have a connector, as we like to call it, to the message hub. That could be a microservice, or it could be student management itself. Message hub doesn't really care. But sometimes we like to put them in here. Connector.
They also call adapters and
yes. Come back to that.
Okay.
So it will say then it will publish an event and saying with a few rules. First it will publish a document event to say this is something that happened to a document. So it will be, and it would have its source system name. So U for student management, student, that's the name, the event name.
So the event name is a combination of the application source name in the actual, is that the doc, is that the event document?
The event, the event type, as we call it.
So it then identifies the document.
Oh. Yep.
So this is student document.
And then it has a message type.
Yeah.
Which is document.
Yeah.
So it says this is an event and it's a document event, so you can expect to find an enterprise document attached to me.
Yeah.
And it also says because it's a document event, it has a header call saying that it's document type. Again, students. U for student management. Student. So it's a student enterprise document. And a unit for student management version of that, or sort of specialization of that. True?
Yeah.
And then it will also have a key. That's an enterprise key. That sort of says, this document that's attached can be universally referred to with this key. And that has some buildup that makes it unique.
Mm-hmm.
It is a compartment for your student, your source system, your document type, your tenant, which, because this is a world of multi-tenant systems.
So the enterprise key is unique within a given installation.
Yes, but then we add on the extra information that makes it unique in the ecosystem as well, right? So we say...
Yeah, that's what I mean. So it becomes globally unique.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
It also has this tenant.
Exactly. Yeah.
Tenant X.
Yeah.
Which means this is the unit for unit for customer or organization using these two systems together.
Yeah.
They have this unique key.
Yeah.
So all their data is tagged with that.
Yes.
It's truly, truly important not to intermingle data.
Yeah.
Because we're flowing here from pieces of applications that might be single tenant and multi-tenant. True platform services that are multi-tenant.
Yes.
So this is
so very actually, in when documents are flowing in transport, it's on multi-tenant, it's on main. So it's actually up to these two ends to make sure if it's a multi-tenant solution, when it gets in the information, to make sure it actually yes.
So, and this key that just let's just say that said, but it amounts to something uniquely identifying this John student in the...
Again, you can find the definitions of an enterprise key in information.
Yes, so. Absolutely. And that's about it. And then in addition, it is this document here attached.
Yeah.
This can be as big as you want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The message hub handles that.
Yeah.
So that's... you don't have to think about that. So Unit for Student Management will then say, hey, there's another thing. I forgot that.
So let's do a little on. Yeah, I know this. Yeah, so put that on, and then we'll do the. It's
change type. And
right.
This case is new.
Net new.
Yeah. So like so this create, is a new document. Delete, yeah. This is the first time you see this.
So you said this about the size. So this let's take a discussion that because we got the guy getting questions about somebody reading that you can only have 64 kilobyte on a message.
Yeah.
Then let's. Try to give a rundown how that works, because otherwise,
So this has probably been explained in other talks and videos from people platform that the message hub is using under the hood is using Azure Service Bus.
Right.
We are not trying to reinvent the Buses. World here. I mean, that's for people that really knows how to do that. And Microsoft happened to do that with Azure Service Bus or Windows Service Bus, which is something you can run on premise. It has, for good reasons, limitations on how big messages can be,
mm-hmm.
right? For its own scalability purposes.
Mm-hmm.
They have put limits on how big this header section can be and how big a body can be.
Mm-hmm.
So people reading about Azure Service Bus, they will find this, I think it's 128K for the body and 64K for this or something like that.
Yeah,
And there will obviously be big documents as well
mm-hmm.
in our ecosystem that could potentially be bigger than that. So what the Message Hub does, and this is the whole reason why there is a connector here and people are not using the bus entities directly.
Yeah.
Is that abstractly you do the same thing. Hey, I compose this message and I now want to publish it as an event in my source system. But it does this through this layer. This gives us a chance to look at this and see, well, this is not going to fly on the bus. Pick that out and then store it in cloud storage temporarily. I shouldn't write the database because we're not using a database. We're using Azure Blob Storage.
I think you can still try and draw a database because that's how we do it, but never mind.
Yeah, let's draw a database.
Let's draw a database just for everyone to be happy.
You put stuff down, you put it in one of those buckets. And this bucket has X on it, right? Mm-hmm. This is important again because the tenant is X. And so we're storing this data in a safe place for tenant X.
Yeah.
But nobody sees that. So the connector puts the body down there and it takes it out of the message and puts in a unique reference to the document down here, sends the message across, which is now small enough. It now just has a URL instead of the body. And then we're on the receiving end. So basically it has done its job, and this is now constructed so that we can say anybody that is interested in this event from Unit for Student Management will receive the message at least once.
Yes, that's actually very important to say. The message, you will receive the message at least once.
Yep.
You may get it twice, we don't know. And also another thing is messages are not a guarantee to arrive in sequence. So if a system sends out two messages, they are not guaranteed to arrive in that order.
Yes.
So at least once and no sequence guaranteed.
Yes.
Let's just make sure we understand that. So you can't start sending out and expect. You can't have an expectation of the order of arrival.
No.
Or when they arrive.
You can't have logic on the other end that reasons about, well, since I got this message before that one, that happened before that one in the sources.
And that's actually that's a very key important thing to be aware of, because that changes how you program.
Yeah.
So you need to put into your code that these prerequisite, you need to consolidate that. If you for some reason have transactional foreign key constraints or transaction integrity in your data model, mm-hmm. you need to make sure you consolidate the inbound document mm-hmm. before you actually go write the information into the database.
Yes.
And this is a function of the event-driven, loosely coupled architecture.
Yeah. Okay, we got it on the bus. there happens to be a subscriber out there that is interested in this. So we call another entity of an event-driven messaging pattern. We have a publisher, this guy. And we have a subscriber, in this case, Unit for Business World.
So this is the pub, and this is the sub.
Yep. And
they're both source systems.
Yes. So it has before this, it has told the message hub that whenever there is a U4 student management source system students events, I'm interested, so please give me all of those. That it has done before even the first message has arrived. So there's already a prepared sort of private output queue just for Unit for Business World, just for Tenant X, and in this case, just students' messages will come on that. So it will then finally get this. And it has what we call an integration adapter. There's a specialized connector to the message hub that subscribes for the purpose of integration. It's not a first class entity or something, it's what we call it in an architecture. So when you have like a smart endpoint that understands what a Unit for Student Management students event is and knows what to do with it, you are writing an integration adapter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And without that, Unit for Business World wouldn't know what to do with a student.
No.
So this is piece of the integration that these guys made.
It's a pattern, right?
Yes.
Because as you said before, you could actually put it inside the application.
Mm.
But our recommendation is, if you think about the application, our recommendation is to build it outside the application.
Yeah.
So you can have its own lifecycle. So it's easier to create whatever changes you need.
I would say it's more important to create these integration adapters, these smart endpoints that potentially have lots of things to do to interpret a foreign event outside. So it can independently be delivered as a unit. Than these publishing things.
Yeah.
I would say it's architecturally fine to publish from within an application. If you have a safe place where you know this is the place where the change happened, send it off.
Yeah, so there is actually a little catch to that. So because essentially what we say is that writing the transactional document to the internal store and producing the document. I'm not going to say it have to, but it ought to be in the same transaction, right? Actually means that in most cases, what you end up doing inside your application is that when you write the specific transaction, being like the student, mm-hmm. you will also send the message.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you have no guarantee that you actually, if you separate it out in two, for example, let's say you separate it out in two and you actually build a construct out here that retrieves using the APIs,
yep.
you might lose.
It's a very important point. It might be architectural right to do a publish inside the application, but we have a golden rule that what you say has happened really happened.
And they are bad.
You didn't change your mind and abort your transaction.
No.
And it really didn't happen after all. That would create huge amounts of problems. So as a publisher, what you say has happened.
And you also need to make sure, because you could have a situation, if you don't construct it as one transaction, that you make multiple updates to the same document, but you only, because of latency, you only sent the last one.
Yeah.
So you lose a history, which is unacceptable as well. So that's like
it's on you. It's on your source system's responsibility to do that right.
Yes.
There's many techniques. You can buffer it up and you can do things, but when you say it has happened, it has happened.
Yeah. So same transaction, you write it, and you construct the document and you send it.
Yep. Okay, mm-hmm. back to the integration adapter. In this case, let's take what this does. So we were talking about the student that is also an employee. So there might be another integration adapter that's also in play here that turns all students into customers, but it's not the case we're looking at now. We're looking at, we're trying to pick out those that are also tutors and employees.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an integration adapter that deals with students with specific properties probably in it that tells you it's someone that you should also record as an employee in your ERP. So it figures that all that out. What it does is also said this is a new one. I'm probably going to create one. But I need to, when I do that for the future, I need to remember that John is whatever it is in here. So I basically need to create a relation between this key here and my key of my employee and say that this is the same thing out there in the real world.
We have the key mapper.
Yeah.
As a service.
This is an optional part of the architecture, but in the case of student management or business world, we did not have, for the case of employees and many other items, we don't have like a special place to store external references.
Right.
If you have that, it's fine. You don't need to do any key mapping because your system can do key mapping and referencing something external. So then you would just put that key there, and that's fine. And you can go look it up. Do I have that? And things.
Yeah, but
like
I think
that.
So again, the problem is you need to have a foreign key mapping, right? Because you have a key coming in.
Just have to remember this guy from
the
next.
Then you have your own business key. Mm. So if an update comes across, you should be able to kind of figure it out again somehow, right? So that's why we came up with this concept of key mapping.
Yeah.
And we provided a service called the Key Mapper.
Yeah.
Right. And the reason that we provided a service, API,
Yep.
So a reason that we provided the service was that it's, since we recommend this being building outside the application, you can actually create this whole scenario without touching the back office application. Whereas if you needed to go and put in additional columns for each document, it becomes very invasive, right? Yep.
You can use whatever you like, but behind the scenes here, and this is most likely going forward, you would go through one of these domain APIs that we talked about in the last episode. But here we're going straight to the to the business world application. So what it will do, it will say, okay, I'm pretty sure that I need to first. I'll be looking up this key just to be safe. So I'm looking up. So do I for the source system U for business world have a registered mapping to the U for student management students with this key here that I have on the document.
So you're checking if it exists.
If I have that, then I know, okay, I already have that employee, and then I'm checking to see if there's anything to do.
But in this case, this is a new. But let's make it an update then.
Okay, we change the case to an update. Okay.
Yeah,
John became a tutor, which is a better case anyway.
Yeah.
So John was a student, he was a good customer, and now he became a student, a tutor. Great. So we look up and we find the mapping, we find the thing to change, and that's fine. How you apply that change and what you do as sort of a result of getting a message, that's totally up to you. In this case, we're syncing data, so you're changing data back. In this integration, we also called APIs to do that.
Yeah.
So we went to the employees. Endpoint made a change.
And this is actually a good example where you could, if you have an older application, inject the domain, like the domain API.
Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
The embracer pattern. Right.
Exactly.
Like we talked about last time. You could do that. So we can.
So what it would do, so this case then it was an update and I had the key mapped from before and I did the whole thing.
Yeah.
No problem. If I didn't get a result from the key mapper, there's nothing corresponding to what I wanted to create over here, then I would create it and then I would store the mapping.
Yeah.
And systems are different. And so as soon as you have your internal part of the key, you map.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then for the future.
Yeah.
And then this works, of course, it's not one line per thing, so many other systems can have their mapping to the same one. That's fine. Yeah. So you do look up in scope of your bit.
So the cool thing about this, like you talked about before, is that in case we have this scenario where we are sending out students, if you, for example, say you are adding a reporting solution or something like that, right? Let's take our CPM stuff here, right?
Mm-hmm.
You could plug CPM in,
yep.
And this would again have a service, and then it would have an integration adapter, right? We call them not AI, but IA. And then that would get its own kind of queue here.
Yep.
And you're all set. So essentially mean, all of a sudden, when student management create this piece, start sending these, all these integrations becomes available for free.
Yeah.
Right. You don't have to do
And it's content in the ecosystem sense of the word. It's an event, not only in this source system, it's an event for this tenant in this ecosystem.
Right.
So speaking a little bit to the extensions kit, it's something you could trigger a very customized thing as well, right?
Yeah.
So extensions kit could sit here and have a flow configured for this and do something
else. This is kind of like this is like the basics, right?
Mm.
And then we're gonna have another episode talking about the higher of the other services surrounding this. But in the core of our the whole architecture is this. This is what drives it.
Mm.
Essentially, without this, nothing else works.
Yep. So, just for the case of the argument, I mean. If this is a bi-directional integration, then this would of course result in business world sending another event that, hey, I changed an employee here.
Right.
And send its version of John's enterprise document out here, but as an employee, not as a student.
Exactly.
There could, of course, be, or very likely is, and is in this example, an integration adapter on the student management side that will get that message.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it will then go, okay, yeah, but I have that. And looks like there's nothing to do for me, so I forget about it.
So before we kind of round this up, there's one thing I'd like to cover as well, because typically when you go into an existing installation, you have the data that you need to synchronize.
Yeah.
So we call it the initial load problem.
Yeah.
Right. So one thought we had originally was to say we could just go into this application, and then we can start sending out.
Yeah, it's all fine. Well, so this has been there from the beginning of time for this X tenant, and this one has been there for the beginning of time. There's no initial load. Somebody enters the first student and flows into here, and it's all great and handy. But say they had been using student management for a good while.
Mm-hmm.
But now we have, they've taken the opportunity to also do do accounting and payroll and things with another Unifor product, in this case Business World, and they throw that into the mix empty.
Yeah.
So it will then obviously, with only this in place, just have the future changes from the source system. So they need to do an initial load, right? And that's a pattern where we'll use another sort of native part of Message Hub, a messaging pattern called an actor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's a request response pattern. So basically, Business World knows there is something out there and they want it, so it's their job to get it,
mm-hmm.
right? Just as it's in the pub sub, it's your job to tell people about stuff. So, let's just say, and a naive implementation of this would be to build in some specific features here that is natively exporting to a Business World instance or anything like that. So then we would just like fake lots of changes to all your data, and then obviously they will start to be published.
Mm-hmm.
And it will eventually get all the data, but what about the other guys, right?
Yeah.
They will get lots of not real changes,
right?
And they will do lots of work for nothing.
Yeah.
So we want to avoid that. So that's a pattern you shouldn't use. You shouldn't sort of fake publish.
No.
Yeah. So instead, there will be a call out, but also not through an API, because there can be potentially a lot of data here, and it can take a while to consume it all. Then you will call a specialized actor here. Actually, this is constructed a little bit product agnostic, but forget about that. Now it's a student management. So U4 student management actor of, just call it a loader.
Mm-hmm.
It could be a specialized loader just for students.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine. So then it defines its own contract, what it's going to accept as a message and what it's going to reply. So it turns the thing around. In PubSub, there's fire and forget. You don't care about anybody else's contract. When you're writing an actor, you own the contract. So it says the thing using this loader needs to know how to use it. Unfortunately, it's standardized when you're using loading enterprise documents. There's standardization we get from another piece of platform definition, which is how you should have query APIs and things like that. We use the query pattern of that, and you send that as a message, so please give me all the students that are also tutors. So you have a little filter, you know, not all students, but tutor students.
Yes, the guy can do some data filtering.
Yeah.
Right.
You send that as a command, just as you would call an API, and then a connection is opened. And this is a session, right? So you establish a session with this guy, you send it a message, it starts to do work, and in this case there was lots of them, so it can't send it all back in one message. So it will split them up and send several streamed messages over. Again, with that right balance of this cap size here for when it uses storage and things like that.
So what's important is using the messaging as well.
It's using the messaging.
Yeah.
So both commands and replies are also messages. Just special messages.
So it's loosely coupled asynchronous communication.
Yeah. Okay. But on the inside, you have for the invocation of one, you have like one, you have a private channel over there.
Yeah.
That. So for since we call these actors, and this is from the actor model, this is an architectural pattern from.
You can look it up on Wiki.
Yeah, you Google it. Yeah. If you see a video with a guy in a rainbow shirt, Eric Meyer talking about it, that's a really good video about the actor model.
Yes.
But there's a few rules to what an actor can be in an actor model, and we try to adhere to that.
Yeah.
Right. You can call another actor, or you can designate behavior of the next message, which means you can appear as stateful.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's optional. We call it an actor, and just to, in the message hub lingo, to take the movie analogy a little bit, make a little fun of that. I think calling an actor is a director, right? So there's a director here on the loader side of business world that tells its actor to give it data. There's no room to draw that here, but it's still through the same hub with a special connector, and you can then do your regular logic, just reuse that. You have loads of time. This is asynchronous. There's nobody waiting for this. So,
right.
Try to make the messaging effective as possible. But again, what you do with the returns is up to you.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yep.
So this is actually an integration that we built, and we have a team working on this, on the student management side.
Yeah, I think they are looking at this actor, the load case.
Right now. So essentially what we introduced here is, again, the lower layers, we come up with we have the enterprise document being the ecosystem-wide interpretation of any object. We offer some tooling creating that in data tools.
Yep.
So you can get that, and you can easily map your attributes and create these documents.
Mm-hmm.
There's the message hub services and SDKs and actually APIs as well, REST-based APIs, or you can use the SDK.
Not for the actual communication, but there are definitely APIs for registering and getting access and all that.
I want to have these messages.
And then we have a Java SDK and a .NET SDK for doing this.
We have a Java SDK as well. Together with Prevero, we kind of can.
And then we have a good description of how the flow is, should you write it in a language that doesn't have an SDK, because it's really not that hard, but you need to do this storing part.
Yeah, that's where the kind of bare REST-based API comes in.
It's the content of the connector part.
And then we have patterns for the integration and app.
Yep.
Available. And we have, of course, for the embracers, if you want to use domain APIs. And we have for the actor, and then we have some other technologies you could use if you go through and use the data tools. You can actually use a query APIs as well, so you can kind of you get a lot of this out of the box.
Though. Yeah.
So,
but very important, like Message Hub is not really first class with a lot of these things. It's about these patterns. Pub sub.
Yeah.
The message type document is special. We can have directors, and you can have actors, and you can send messages, and we'll take care if it's too big. Make sure that it never crosses boundaries of a tenant when it shouldn't be, and things like that. But it really doesn't know about enterprise documents. It really doesn't about it, doesn't use it at runtime or anything.
No, it's oblivious.
So that's an important part.
It could be transporting bananas for whatever we can.
Absolutely.
So we don't care about that.
It often does.
So that's kind of about, I guess that's pretty much it, right? And we also have, we also have another integration, like the Pepper integration that actually uses Sys, but we won't go into that here. But it generally, we encourage people to get on this.
It is an important point. So this is a unit for product, and this is a unit for product, and they make up a unit for ecosystem, and it's about communication and data exchange and standardizing stuff in the ecosystem.
We call it, this is what we refer to as the unit for ecosystem.
Or parts of it, absolutely.
Yeah, well, anything that's a Unit 4 native application.
Mm.
That is, and it doesn't any application.
I want to cover this because the people come and ask, "Well, can I use MessageHub to integrate with BizTalk or SAP?" Or
that's not the point. We have a different product for that.
Yep.
We call it SIS.
Yes.
So we can cover that in another episode if you want to, but this is only for applications that natively uses these artifacts and enterprise documents and can read and write to the bus. That's what we call the Unit 4 ecosystem.
Yep.
And it's not like, and the Unit 4 ecosystem, and that's any Unit 4 application. It's not like it's domestic, global, we don't care.
Nope.
So, but it's absolutely interesting for anyone because it gets you to this point where when you build this if you're this application and you build this piece, you're done.
Yep.
You're done, right? You don't have to deal with point-to-point integration anymore.
Yep.
It's all handled.
And you can do it very incrementally also, right?
Sure.
I've been tasked to integrate with my product with another product. It's perfectly okay to then look at your system and look at that integration case and only define, say, the enterprise documents that will be in play here. You don't need to take it all and describe.
But that's fine. Yeah. But there is one. You cannot start sending anything but enterprise documents.
Nope.
That is a no-go, right? Because
then you're as long as you send MessageHub document.
Yeah.
So if you just communicate with anything else, there's a generic event.
Yeah,
then
but
you can
we need
send
to do that because that we have new technologies coming up. Where we want to consume anything that's going on for using to data mining, to machine learning, to build more self-driving capabilities. So we cannot have documents that's not enterprise documents.
No.
It won't. So that's a prerequisite. So if anyone starts doing that, that's not allowed.
Mm.
Anyway, so I think this pretty much covers what we wanted to cover in this episode. So, you know, I hope you enjoyed the show.
Yeah.
Enjoyed learning more about it. And again, as usually, you know, go on to now the hub, not the U4PP anymore. Go to the hub, unit4.com. And there's on the right, left side, there's a PP platform. You can find all that information that was previously available on U4PP.
Yeah.
And U4PP docs. You can find that in there now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if you have any questions, contact us. And actually, I think if you have questions, send us your questions.
Yeah.
And then I think on the next episode, we can then try to answer these questions before we start on the topic, maybe more advanced integration scenarios.
Mm.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you, Klaus. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.